And this is A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott.
And I'm Dennis O'Hare. The recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that struck down bans on same-sex marriage in Georgia and other states has raised a new debate. One of the many questions, will the decision have any effect on the fight over the bill entitled the Georgia Religious Freedom Restoration Act, often called RFRA, which passed the state Senate earlier this year and then stalled in the House Judiciary Committee. Columbus Republican State Senator Josh McCoon is the author of the RFRA bill. He's back with us for an update. Senator, welcome and thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Now, just to reset here, the reason that the bill stalled in the House Judiciary Committee was you really resisted efforts to add anti-discrimination language to the bill. A lot of people were concerned it would open the door toward discrimination against LGBT people. Does the Supreme Court decision change your position on that anti-discrimination language one way or the other?
Not at all. I think the main implication for the Supreme Court decision, and you're seeing other states wrestle with this now, are the additional sort of collateral attacks that are now available to prosecute through courts on religious liberty. For example, the discussion about the tax-exempt status of religious institutions, the potential attacks on religious-based adoption agencies and the policies they have in terms of placing children with families. Those are the sorts of things I think we're now going to see play out in addition to the issues we were trying to rectify with RFRA.
But how much of that is realistic, though? I mean, certainly after a landmark decision, people will wonder what the effects are. That's only natural. But there is the First Amendment, and it's pretty clear on not only whether a state can establish religion, but whether a state can infringe on religious organizations. And a lot of religious leaders have raised the fear this would lead to the government requiring them to perform same-sex marriage ceremonies they've asked, for instance. But doesn't the First Amendment make that pretty much a baseless fear, or perhaps one that might be put out there for political reasons?
I think many on the left are drawing a straight line from the Bob Jones versus United States Supreme Court case in the mid-1980s to taking the tax-exempt status away from religious institutions that teach that marriage is between a man and a woman. And frankly, I think that that argument, could potentially hold some water. I think, you know, we've seen commentators here in Georgia within 3 days of this decision calling for the removal of tax-exempt status for religious institutions. So I think it's a very real concern, and it's something that does need to be addressed, hopefully in the next legislative session.
Senator McCoon, you've said that this bill here, your legislation in Georgia, should mirror the language in the Federal Religious Freedom Act. My first question, still, for some people that are listening that may just be kept catching up on this, they may say, well, why isn't that enough, number one? And while that may sound harmless, if you're not willing to accept an anti-discrimination clause, does that in fact create an opportunity to discriminate?
I don't believe it does create an opportunity to discriminate. I think had we adopted the language of the Jacobs Amendment, what we would have done is, in essence, give every local government in the state the opportunity to legislatively veto the protection of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in their jurisdiction. I think it would have created a patchwork of religious liberty protection around the state that would be unpredictable. And frankly, in the 5 years I've been in the legislature, I'm unaware of any bill where we essentially said to the 800 or so local subdivisions of the state of Georgia, you can opt in or opt out of this law and decide whether or not this is an appropriate policy for your local government to follow.
But wouldn't having that language, detailed language, wouldn't that set or at least present for people a defined, clear definition of what is viewed as discrimination and anti-discrimination? Wouldn't that be?
I really don't think so, because if you look at the way the Texas RFRA is being applied right now, and a lot of people said to us, well, just put the Texas language in. Well, the Attorney General of Texas is saying that the RFRA language there allows county clerks to refuse to issue marriage licenses, which people are saying is a discriminatory act. So I think the real sort of nugget of this entire debate is, what do we really consider the word discrimination to mean? If someone's sincerely held religious belief compels them to believe certain things about the nature of the family and the nature of human sexuality, does that mean that they are per se discriminating? I mean, this is really new ground, I think, for us in frankly, in American legal history, and that's why so many people are concerned.
Well, let's take the county clerk example for a moment. We have yet to see a case like that here in Georgia. But if a county clerk, for religious reasons, says, okay, I'm not going to issue either licenses to same-sex couples or any licenses at all, doesn't the state have an interest in saying, look, these same-sex couples are entitled by the Supreme Court decision to equal protection under the law. So while that individual clerk's religious conviction should be protected, he or she shouldn't have to personally issue the license, doesn't the clerk's office have an obligation to do it?
No question.
Wouldn't anti-discrimination language in your RFRA bill ensure that?
Well, I mean, that was why I was bringing up the Texas example. The Texas example has language along the lines of what the opponents to just passing the federal bill clean have been raising. And obviously, they're experiencing the very problem that opponents have been calling, an issue here.
But couldn't that problem come up anyway? I mean, we're seeing it in other states that don't have the Texas language. So couldn't that come up anyway? And, I mean, I interrupted you. Shouldn't county clerks have shouldn't the office have the obligation to issue the license?
Well, there's no question under the decision that whoever is responsible for issuing a marriage license has to do that. It is now a matter of constitutional law. I think the issue, though, about passing the federal RFRA language clean is, as I have said repeatedly, has never resulted in any sort of discriminatory conduct being shielded by a court. And I think that puts us in a safe harbor, an area where we have 20 years plus of case history to draw on. And that's why we don't want to go outside that federal language.
We're speaking with Columbus Republican State Senator Josh McCoon. He's the author of the Georgia's Religious Freedom Restoration Act. He's back with us now for an update. And Senator McCoon, we talked to Representative Stacey Abrams not too long ago, and we asked her about your legislation. Was there any compromise? And frankly, she said there's no compromise. There's no reason for this. That being said, and you look at your colleagues in the General Assembly there, do you feel like you have enough to get this pushed through, or will you have the same opposition? Because it seems that it's either clear on one side or the other, and middle ground doesn't seem to be a case here.
Well, and I think that's unfortunate. The Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed by a wide bipartisan majority. I think that the issue of religious freedom was something that we all used to rally around. However, if you look at the vote in the Senate, we passed this bill 37-15. We were one vote short of a constitutional amendment level majority, a supermajority. If this same language is given the opportunity for a vote in the House, I would expect a similar result. The question is whether or not the leadership in the House, frankly, is going to allow a bill to come to the floor that is substantially similar to the Senate bill. If that happens, I have every confidence it will pass, and it will pass by a strong majority.
But do you also have to sort of extend an olive branch to just make sure that that happens? Because there are a lot of lawmakers who feel like this is just opening up another can of worms, in a sense, as it relates to. And also, there the flip side is some have said, well, now with the Supreme Court's ruling on gay marriage, you have a little bit of steam as well. So I guess it depends on who you ask.
Well, the opposition, again, I think is frankly somewhat disingenuous, because Georgians today have the protections of the law that I am trying to pass if they're dealing with the federal government. So the idea that somehow there need to be two separate levels of protection is something that no one in this debate has been able to clarify for me.
Well, let me ask you this, because one could argue, although same-sex marriages are now legal in all 50 states, let's look at Georgia. There's no protection against employees in the private sector from discriminating against someone on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity or gender expression. Shouldn't lawmakers take that up first?
I frankly think that the priority here is to deal with the potential collateral attacks on religious freedom. And these are not academic hypotheticals. In the state of Massachusetts, the Catholic adoption services had to shut down because of the laws related to making same-sex marriage legal in Massachusetts in 2003. Over 2,000 families, 2,000 children that were being served by Catholic charities suddenly were thrown back on the state or other agencies. These are very real consequences that you know, could occur very soon. And so I think that's really where our focus needs to be, is to deal on with the potential consequences for religious liberty in our state.
Are you saying that religious freedoms outrank sexual orientation in terms of priority?
I think that the First Amendment to the Constitution is clearly protects the most fundamental liberties of all Georgians, the right of free speech, the right to petition your government, the right of free association, and the free exercise of religion. I think that without those rights, it's very difficult to have any other individual civil liberties. So I think that's where we need to put our focus and get these issues clarified.
Are you saying, and to follow up on Rose's question, that the First Amendment trumps the Equal Protection Clause?
What I am saying is, again, the opposition to this bill has been trying, and to a large degree being successful, in trying to say you can't have this protection of religious liberty unless you advance this unrelated political agenda of ours that we've been unable to pass for years. I fundamentally reject the notion that someone's going to hold a gun to my head and say, you've got to pass this unrelated bill before we're going to take up the religious liberty legislation. I think that's wrong. I certainly would not expect to treat other lawmakers that way. And I frankly think that, you know, if we could have a clean debate on that issue separately, I would welcome that debate and discussion. I think that's something we ought to discuss here in Georgia. But it should not be paired in any way with protections of religious freedom. They're two separate and distinct issues.
Even if it passes the House, comes out of committee and passes the House, and they're able to work out the different versions and get a bill to the governor, then there's the governor. And I spoke with him earlier this spring. I asked him about the idea of adding anti-discrimination language as something that he might want to see. And here's what he had to say.
How can we achieve that?
Well, if you look at what those two states did after they had taken action in one direction, they had to come back and reverse it. I think that's a little bit of an embarrassing situation for legislative bodies to put themselves in. That's why I think you should embrace any kind of language that would avoid that kind of conflict. Now, can you avoid it completely? No, I don't think you can. There will still be those who will object. But I think there, hopefully, is a middle ground that will achieve what those who support the RFRA legislation are for, and by the same token, not lend itself to being used as a tool for discrimination.
Yet in the Judiciary Committee hearings, the bill's supporters said that you really can't do that without, and I believe this was the words of Senator Josh McCoon, the sponsor, undercutting the purpose of the bill.
Well, that's his opinion.
So have you spoken to the governor recently, number one? And number two, isn't that really the problem right at the end there, where you're saying these are two separate things, protecting religious freedom and then addressing discrimination? But aren't folks who've experienced discrimination saying these are linked because people expressing religious objections have used it as a way to discriminate?
Well, the first thing I would say is you heard the governor talk about Indiana and Arkansas.
Right.
Those bills went beyond the language of the federal legislation. Those bills had language that would allow the business owner to say, I'm refusing service based on a religious belief. Our language in Senate Bill 129 does not do that. And Arkansas, the Arkansas middle position was to pass the federal language, was to pass the language of Senate Bill 129. So to the extent that is the language to which the governor is referring, I agree wholeheartedly. I'm for the Arkansas Compromise, which is the language of Senate Bill 129. I think the other issue here, when we're talking about the anti-discrimination amendment that was offered, again, that was really just something that would allow local governments to legislatively veto the protection of RFRA. We've had some discussion here today about legislation creating a protected class under Georgia law. Georgia doesn't have any legislation along those lines for any protected class. We've historically picked up the federal language. So that's what I mean when I say this is a different issue. When we're starting to talk about creating protected classes for the purposes of public accommodations, housing, or employment, that is a fundamentally different issue from what we are going to do to protect the religious liberty interests of 10 million Georgians.
And real quickly, have you spoken to the governor about whether he'd sign the bill if it passed without some sort of language to which he referred, where he said he wanted to make sure it wasn't used as a tool for discrimination?
I have not had a conversation with the governor since the 11 congressional district conventions and the state convention of the Republican Party unanimously endorsed the position of the state Senate. But I certainly expect we're going to have those conversations as we get closer to the legislative session in January. And I feel confident that, as the governor said at the beginning of this debate, he wants us to send him a bill that mirrors the bill he voted for in 1993. And that is the commitment that I have made.
Senator McCone, immediately after the Supreme Court came down with its ruling, you took to Twitter. You were very active that day. One of your tweets, "This decision departs from the rule of law. It's disappointing." And then you also cautioned churches to get with their administration and find out what their legal rights. You were on Twitter all day. Why?
I think it's very important for people to understand not just the immediate impact of the Supreme Court's decision. And as Justice Roberts said in his dissent, whether you agree as a matter of policy in legalizing same-sex marriage or not, the decision was disappointing from a judicial function point of view, in my opinion, because this was not a case of constitutional interpretation. This was a case of five Supreme Court justices substituting their legislative judgment for the legislative judgment of people and their elected representatives in 30-some-odd states. And that's why I was disappointed with the decision.
But isn't that what the Supreme Court is supposed to do when legislatures go farther than the Constitution? And it, how, you know, one could say that both sides in the Supreme Court, all nine justices, were looking at the Constitution, interpreting it differently, but not going beyond the bounds either way. The majority was looking at equal protection, which is certainly a part of the Constitution, and saying these state bans deny equal protection. So you might disagree with it, but why would you say, okay, this goes beyond what justices are supposed to do? Aren't both sides doing exactly what they're supposed to do?
Well, I think that if you read the dissenting opinions, they're very clear in what they're saying, which is basically the court used the 14th Amendment to say, we are going to expand upon what we believe is a constitutional right to marry. When I talk about the constitutional right of free exercise, it is there in black and white. You can read it in the First Amendment. It is not something that is basically, in my opinion, invented by the court through an application of a case law doctrine. And that's why I think the opposition was so strong. I'll also add, if you look at the dissents, when we talk about the validity of the threat to religious freedom, when you have people like Chief Justice Roberts, who I believe is a very sober, whatever you think about his judicial philosophy, he's not an alarmist. When he's saying you need to look out at what this means for religious liberty, I think policymakers would be irresponsible not to take that warning seriously.
Senator McCone, as we wrap up here, and this totally switching to a different topic, I want to get your thoughts, though, on this whole issue of the Confederate emblem and its place, whether it's Georgia or any other state. Where is it acceptable to have it, in a state agency, on state grounds, or even on a state-issued license plate?
I think, I've read the comments made by Ambassador Andrew Young, and those are really, I think, right on the money as far as this issue is concerned. I think we ought to take all the attention and all the energy being focused on the Confederate battle flag and direct it towards root causes of racial tension and, frankly, underlying problems of poverty in our state, rather than focus on something that creates a lot of racial division. I think, it does not belong on a state capitol. I think that in a museum, in a place where history is being remembered, I think that is entirely appropriate. But I think what we really need to do is move toward taking this space, taking this discussion, and having a real dialogue about making the tough choices in public policy to move forward on the underlying
matters.
Does
it belong on a state-issued license plate?
You know, I think that the governor, again, is quite right in what he has said about that, which is, let's take a look at it, let's review it, let's have a discussion about it, and then come back and make a decision. I think that's an appropriate way to look at the issue.
And real quickly, what would you say to somebody who says, looking at not just the license plate, but at some of the memorials and so forth that were placed in prominent places in public at a time when the people who might object had no vote at all, that maybe it's time to at least look at some of these objects and where they're placed?
I think that decisions about that, you know, obviously they rest with the local governments. That discussion's happening all over the country.
So would you oppose the bill that would make it harder for this is in the House now, but it would make it harder for local governments to move some of these monuments or memorials unless they put them in a similarly prominent place?
I'd have to look at the bill to give you a firm answer on that. I do think we have to be very cautious about sanitizing or censoring our history and moving in a direction that I think is ultimately destructive. But I would have to look at the bill to make a comment on that.
Republican Senator Josh McCoon from Columbus, thanks so much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator.
And happy 4th.